If there's one thing this show wants you to know, guys.
What? Gods die?
You gotta move on with your life or death?
No, guys. Don't fuck with those bitches in airports. Also, don't fuck with Mr. Wednesday.
He'll turn you into bullets. Hello and welcome to The Dominant Paradigm, an American Gods podcast. Episode 6, A Murder of Gods. We are your hosts,
Dwayne D.
Andrew Cercini.
And Tosin Unifowakin.
We just watched the 6th episode of Starz American Gods titled A Murder of Gods. We assume you have as well. Total spoilers ahead. So let's dive into the after talk. But first we want to catch you up on how to reach us. Here's our online links. Follow us on Twitter at Gods Podcast or just hashtag The Dominant Paradigm. Our Facebook page is Podcast American Gods. You can write us or send us a voice memo at Starz American God. You can write us or send us a voice memo at starzamericangodspod@gmail.com. Add us on iTunes, and if you do so, like us and please leave us a review. That's how we get some attention for our show. All right, Dwayne, before we get into our thoughts on this week's episode, why don't you give us a brief recap of what we saw in this episode?
You got it. Just so everybody knows, I'm not in my normal podcasting location. If there's an intermittent breakup, I apologize, but we're working through the change. All right, here we go. We get a coming to America this scene this week. It's a border crossing. The people seem to be Catholic. Jesus shows up. So does a new character, Vulcan. His men fire upon and scatter the would-be immigrants to the U.S., killing some of them, including the Jesus character. Now, in the normal side of things, Shadow confronts Wednesday about gods as he deals with their arrest and their escape from the police at the hands of Mr. World's crew. Shadow also confesses to Wednesday that he's seen Laura, his dead wife, and Wednesday insists they leave. When he sees Laura in his rearview mirror, Wednesday turns on the music to distract Shadow and drives faster. Laura has trouble tailing them until Mad Sweeney shows up and steals a car for her, claiming that he wants resurrection for Laura so she can live without the coin that she's using to stay alive and give it back to him. Now, Salim, the guy who ended up in the cab after making love to the djinn, he confronts them because it's his cab. They all three get into the car, and Mad Sweeney's like, hey, we gotta go to Kentucky. Wednesday's, he heals the Shadow's wound from the mystical tree that attacked him, and it's basically a bit of a demon. Laura changes the course of the three people, Sweeney, Salim, and her, from Kentucky back to Indiana, to the Crocodile Grill, mm-hmm. where Wednesday and Shadow first met with Mad Sweeney. Meanwhile, Wednesday and Shadow head to Virginia, where Wednesday reveals that he wishes to convert Vulcan to his side. Wednesday also helps Shadow find Laura through a sort of psychic connection to determine if she's really there, if he imagined her. Meanwhile, Laura confronts her family, confronts her former life by looking in on her family and realizing that she's moved on. After that, Vulcan says he's going to stay neutral when Wednesday approaches him, that he won't join Wednesday's side. But when Wednesday asks him to make a sword for him, Vulcan complies, saying since he's not on anybody's side, he's going to be fine. According to Vulcan, the new gods gave him life through mass shootings. So he makes the sword for Wednesday. Wednesday then takes the sword and kills Vulcan. So we're in a whole new situation here. It's uncharted territory for anyone who's ever read the book or whatever. That's the recap.
So let's move on from there into the salient visual and stylistic points of the episode. Tosin, why do you think this episode was called A Murder of Gods?
First up the bat, we have several gods who end up sort of dying in this episode. The first one is the Mexican representation of Jesus, who's we'll talk a little bit more about this later on, but he's essentially self-sacrificed across the borderland by the individuals with guns who look like they're Vulcan's folks. And then we have Vulcan as well, who gets taken out by Wednesday. One of the things that we notice throughout the sort of course of the episode is that we have sort of groups of crows that are hanging around, groups of crows that are sort of witnesses. I believe, Andy, at some point you noted that a group of crows is sort of called like a murder gang. Have you ever seen the film Birds? You see the gathering of crows in there as well too.
It's like a herd of sheep. You say a group of crows is called a murder of crows. So that's kind of a piece of that too.
Yeah, exactly. One of the other things that kind of stood out to me as part of this episode is, Dwayne, you mentioned the powerful quotes and conversations, and we have quite a few supernaturals that are in the cab. They're sort of gathering. They're coming together to, similar to those crows, to, either do a resurrection or something is happening. And, of course, the car itself smells like death from the backseat. But also from the front seat with Laura and others. So we have a sort of a death parade on its way. We see parades often in this episode too, actually.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
What did you guys think about the that opening, that Coming to America opening, the that ends with the shooting of Mexican Jesus visually? Because I'll tell you, my personal feelings is I didn't. This is the first one of these Coming to America sequences that I wasn't crazy about, because I felt like I wasn't sure exactly what it was trying to tell me. Like what it was a little too simplistic and a little too on the nose with the whole.
Tell me more.
With the whole thing about the stigmata and the the stigmata once Mexican Jesus
and
is shot.
And the Sacred Heart of Jesus.
Right. It's just a little too on the nose. Plus, I wasn't sure what the point of that whole sequence was. Was it to tell us that faith in white American Jesus beats out faith in Mexican Jesus? I'm not sure. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, that scene was strange for me, too. I got, the things that stuck out to me were, one, you're right, it was kind of on the nose. And two, Vulcan's words are, it's interesting because Vulcan's words are from the Bible, not necessarily from Jesus, and there are some conflicting things with Jesus's peaceful message and the First Testament. God in the First Testament, his message is less sort of touchy-feely, people might say. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then there's also this idea of, how did Vulcan get from the Mexican border to Virginia so quickly? I mean, he's rich, he could have taken a helicopter, a plane, whatever. But why was he doing that traveling back and forth in the first place, right? If he's getting all these deaths from mass shootings and he's killing some of his own workers every once in a while, why does he need these deaths too? Like, what's going on? And then finally, was he there to kill Jesus specifically? Did he know Jesus was going to show up? He's like, I gotta take you out because you're too much peace and love and I'm about that war situation. I don't know. I know that when I saw the panel and the pilot at South by Southwest, they talked about how it was an interesting time in America regarding effectively immigration, and they wanted to tackle that. I don't know if this was the right way, but that's pretty much all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I actually didn't notice that it was Vulcan there in both instances, and they didn't. I don't believe they gave us a time frame in when that border crossing scene occurred. But I think it was an interesting juxtaposition between the Mexican visualization of Jesus and other believers, and kind of showing that. Showing that what you think may be right or justified may in fact be, similar to the Jews and Jesus from what you see in the Bible, where there's the sort of his death is at the hands of his own people. It's kind of a similar sort of context where it's like, showing his profession for love and community and integration while staunch believers of the same Jesus, are the ones who are sort of killing him and causing, such sort of sacrifice and pain.
Yeah, there's this line in The Merchant of Venice, and it says, "The devil can cite scripture for his purpose." Mm. And the idea there is you can kind of look at the Bible and justify a wide range of actions and beliefs from it, whether it's this kind of peace and love Jesus, the hippie, or a Jesus that's like, we don't like these things, or just, God saying, I have to put my wrath on you because you've been bad, right? So there's lots of different ways to interpret stuff. And that was an it was a kind of on the nose layout of that. I think it could have been done more delicately, more interestingly. This kind of different look at the same text and figuring out and showing us how different people interpret it. But I mean, you know, one bad coming to America, I can get over it.
But and I think this is also kind of one of the first, or feels like one of the first direct connections between Coming to America and the episode that follows. I also sort of feel like, given that they've started diverging from the book a bit more in these sequences, we're going to see a lot more of these in the future.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see what they do in future episodes moving forward as they expand upon the contents of the book over the course of 3 to 5 seasons, potentially. So we also see some interesting visuals in this episode, like I think this is the first time that we've seen map visuals a la, you know, like an old serial, or as most people are more familiar with the Indiana Jones movies, where they are traveling across the map and you see the actual map route being laid out in front of them. And you see, you know, where Laura Madsweeney and
Salim,
yeah, where they are, and then where the other guys are.
It was interesting because, I mean, I'm going to call those guys the Three Stooges right now, so we don't have to keep on remembering their names. But it was also interesting because, you know, the last weird thing we saw was kind of like the car driving over the marshmallows. And while this was threw me off a little bit, I liked it because it was way more concrete than a car driving on top of marshmallows while someone's thinking about snow. So I was kind of cool with that. But yeah, the Three Stooges go one way. These guys go the other way. We get to Virginia in the book, but it's in a very different manner. So that was also interesting because I feel like most of the story takes place in the Midwest. And this was interesting. I think this kind of the closure that Laura gets out of that, that was also pretty cool. But this map thing was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah, this is my last one. It's about pretty much Laura talks about shame, right? Madsweeney's like, it smells like death. She's like, I'm not ashamed that I'm dead, right? I'm not ashamed about anything about me, right? I'm alive and I'm doing what I'm going to do. And that's really interesting because when she was alive, we're not sure what was driving her to want to kill herself, but she wasn't a proud person back then. She just wanted it all to go away. She wanted the world to go away. And now she's unapologetically happy with who she is. So I thought that was really interesting from a character perspective. And the way she discussed it was also interesting, especially there's this scene where Madsweeney tries to make this vulgar comment about, like, people want power. That's why men like, you know, anal sex. And she's like, well, I have no shame about that either. I liked it too. So this idea that Laura is now owner of herself and she's not afraid of being who she is anymore, nor is she sad about who she is. She just wants to find Shadow because that's the only person that matters in the wake of her kind of coming to a close with her family. I mean, what do you guys think?
Yeah, it's actually fun to see Laura evolve as a character from the book into this really self-realized, independent character in the show. It's very fun to see her be so empowered, and she is kind of the take charge leader of the Three Stooges here in this road trip, this mini road trip. So it's
fun. She gets to sit in the front seat. I really enjoy the dynamic that they have there. You know, I enjoy the dialogue that they have is just so rich and sort of the poise they have in communicating back and forth, and the personalities really come to light. It's nice that they have this addition to the story. I think this is something that we just never saw from all three characters, and they're really more exposed here. Both, you know, how they feel about life, how they feel about sort of shame, as we talk about here, but, you know, what their thoughts on belief and you know, how they're trying to influence each other to sort of, you know, fuck everything and you know, just move forward.
So let's talk about how these events in this particular episode affect the what we know about the overarching story arc, what we call the big picture. Let's talk about the supernatural characters we meet in this episode, first of all.
So we meet Vulcan, and Vulcan is known as the god of fire. So that's like volcanoes, metalworking, forges in Roman religion and myth. And smiting, of course. So he's also known as Hephaestus.
Hephaestus.
Okay. 3, 2, 1. He's also known as Hephaestus as the sort of Greek mythology. And we see that he has sort of progressed from simply just the hand forging, which he does to create the sword at the very end, mm-hmm. to one of automation, one of machinery, one of mass processing. And what we've learned is world and technology has been able to continually empower him by allowing him to have these sort of tools to make bullets and make guns and sort of progress in terms of the weaponry that happens. But you can tell that there is sort of this close connection between Vulcan and Mr. Wednesday, as they used to sort of be friends in the past, and he wants to bring him to his side. The other sort of point about this is that we kind of, as kind of Dwayne alluded towards when he noted that they wanted to bring things closer to present day, we see robotics taking a larger stance here. The whole sort of automated processing of the factory. We know that for the company involved, the single deaths of people each month doesn't outweigh repairing the factory, and they just kind of let the wheels continue to turn.
Right. That's also interesting because so Hephaestus, Vulcan, is also the god of robotics in a way. If you ever remember Clash of the Titans, there was that robotic owl, right? That was made by Hephaestus. It's a gift to Perseus from Hephaestus. Hephaestus makes clockwork. That's what they used to call automation and machinery, right? Mm-hmm. He's always been the god that's behind that kind of thing. If you could figure out a new way to make gears turn to make your whatever, your mill work better, or you know, the oars for your ship, that was Hephaestus doing that kind of thing. That was Vulcan doing that sort of stuff. So, you know, watching Vulcan as depicted on screen, it's an interesting way to take that concept and put it into a man. And it's also interesting to note that Vulcan himself, as a god, is possibly older than Wednesday. But Wednesday is kind of the chief god because his people came here first. So he's got longer time in America, and this is about American gods. So that was really interesting. It's also obviously the gun situation is an American take on the kind of work that Vulcan did. He used to make, you know, bows and arrows, things like that. Like he gave Cupid his bow and arrow, and now he's making bullets because in America, that's kind of what we care about. We care about guns. So I thought that was all pretty interesting. Flipping over, you get this Jesus character who we don't get to see very much of. We get to see him, you know, it's a young man. He's of a sort of like olive-colored Latin kind of look. He could be he could even be the Greek incarnation of Jesus, if depending on the situation. But what was interesting is if you read the New Testament, Jesus comes back after he dies, and he says things that people are made to think, oh, kind of this what would Jesus do thing. And what's really interesting is that they say, oh, who are you, guy who has all the answers? And he says, you know me. And then it's only that people recognize him as Jesus. When Jesus comes back in that New Testament stuff I'm talking about, he never says, hey, I'm Jesus, I'm back, yay, I've been resurrected. No, instead he says, you know who I am. Or he'll disappear and people will be like, oh my God, that was Jesus. And Jesus used to appear in people's lives, and that's kind to help them out. And that's the way they decided to depict him here. And I thought that was very interesting, as opposed to kind of having him stand on a crucifix or all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the stigmata was on the nose. It was a little bit too much, as if you don't know who Jesus is, if this guy's Jesus, here you go. So I thought that was an interesting thing. This Jesus, you don't get a lot out of him. You just get that he's kind of into the whole peace and love thing, as opposed to the strong war thing. He's a good Samaritan, for lack of a better term. And he's unprepared for the modernity of Vulcan's weapons. So there's that.
We also saw some interesting new things about the tree that attacked Shadow in the last episode. Attacked him, left a wound in him, and apparently left something, some sort of growth in him. And we get this this speech in the car about where Wednesday tells Shadow that he knows all sorts of curses, charms. Yeah, and that was one of my favorite bits of passages in the book, and it was good to see this here. It's in here in a different aspect because in the book he doesn't do what he does in this episode, which is he uses one of those charms to pull this thing out of Shadow's wound that is a leftover remnant from the tree that attacked him, and it's like this living parasite that has gotten into him, and so Wednesday pulls it out and tosses it across the road, and it's this living sort of leftover from the wood, which and then Wednesday goes into talking about Mr. Wood.
I could get into the book, but who cares, because this is the show at this point. But you know, Mr. Wood is the character in the book, and there's sort of a bridge between Mr. Wood and Mr. World here. Andy's going to introduce us to more quotes later, but it's actually worth pulling this one up from the bottom and talking about it now. Wednesday says, when he pulls this thing out of Shadow, Shadow is incredulous, like, what the heck was that? And it's pretty reminiscent of, if you've seen The Matrix, there's this moment when Neo is in the car with the gang, let's call them, the good guys, and they pull a device out of Neo's stomach. He's being tracked. And it seems as if that's the kind of thing that the tree put into our guy Shadow. He basically has some sort of like little bit of demon in him, some sort of kind of tracker that Mr. World put in
like
there.
Like a spore.
Right, like a spore, exactly. And it's just as kind of tingly and with the tentacles as that thing in Neo. So I thought that was a pretty good visualization. That's kind of a callback to another science fiction great. But when we get here, you know, he's like, what the hell is that thing? And Wednesday says, there's always been a God-shaped hole in man's head. Trees were the first to fill it. Mr. Wood was the trees. Mr. Wood was the forest. He saw something very new. He saw a God-fearing society turn toward complete industrialization. So what did he do? He sacrificed his trees. He sacrificed his forest. And he became something else. And it seems that Mr. Wood kind of became Mr. World. And that tree was his tree. That's how I'm interpreting it. How do you guys see it?
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting interpretation, and it definitely makes sense, because one of the things that I feel was kind of lacking in the book is how Mr. World became who he was, or how he rose to power, and this kind of makes it a bit more grounded, that it shows how Mr. World may have been part of the old gods, or the old environment, and knew that he had to adapt and progress. That's what you hear from, you know, the Techno Boy, and that's what you hear from all the others about how great things have become and how the past is sort of gone. It makes sense that Mr. World would be that, and that's also makes sense that he would be the one to be able to empower Vulcan to also become industrialized. So that's I think that's fairly interesting.
And we know the gods, the new gods, are all about truces and deals, right? So they offered Wednesday North Korea and a satellite or something, or a missile or whatever. The idea that this Mr. World with his, like, I can sell the wood, I can get industrialized. Hey, Vulcan is a path to that industrialization to remain relevant. That's interesting to me, too. So I'm going to just take what you said and dovetail into that. This could be just another one of those deals that the new gods have made with an old god in order to get what they want to get, which is what keeps Vulcan neutral in this battle.
Yeah, I also sort of wonder if we'll see any sort of connection between Mr. World's trees and the sort of sacred tree.
Like we know in the book and in the in Norse mythology in general that that tree is known as the World Tree, or
It's Yggdrasil.
So
yeah, Yggdrasil.
We'll see if that's made more explicit in the show moving forward. There's some other big quotes in this episode. Let's get into them and what they mean. Tosin, why don't you read us into the next one?
So Wednesday does say at a point, religion inspires in those who fear nothing, fear of the gods. Using that fear requires a certain element of fucked up. So it's I believe Wednesday is talking about this as he's sort of pulling the spore out. And I think it's a very poignant point to make in this particular episode where we have both the Jesus character who appears, who you see that inspires them as well as also dies due to fear, as well as Vulcan, right? Because if you recall as they're driving through that town, everyone is sort of clutching their weapons and sort of staring, giving long stares to Wednesday and Shadow as they drive by. And you can see how the entire town has changed where, you know, the parade is purely, you know, sort of a remembrance of the person who died, and it's just a regular occurrence, right? And it seems like more of like a rallying cry at the end rather than like a somber burial. Do you guys have any other thoughts to add here?
Yeah, like did you guys notice? I mean, you're talking about this parade and how they were looking at Shadow. So two things here. One, obviously there was some sort of like Nazi motif, right, with the armbands and the black outfits and stuff. So that was strange. Maybe that should have been a salient point. But two, I feel like, was it just me? He says it requires a certain element of fucked up because Shadow says that shit is fucked up. But going back to Tosin's whole parade with the Nazi guys and then how Vulcan was treating, Vulcan was speaking with Wednesday and talking to Shadow, was Vulcan like angry at Shadow? Was he like, I kept on feeling as if Shadow would say something, he's like, no, not you, or something like that. And that was pretty weird and interesting to me. And it just seemed like it was, he's like, maybe you're not a god, so don't get out of this, or you shouldn't be here, or whatever. But I felt like a certain hostility to Shadow.
Oh, yeah.
Vulcan, that was, I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure out where it was coming from.
Yeah, it was a very weird dynamic, especially given, you know, talking about the noose and the tree and everything. It just, it was a bit weird. And correction, I believe that quote was actually said in the car as they were driving through the town.
So that's what I feel when I see this whole like the certain element of fucked up. And let's face it, you got like religion, and religion often has to it prescribes things that doesn't work with everything. That is not to say that it doesn't have all the answers. It has a bunch of answers for a lot of people, but sometimes religion forces people to make choices that don't allow for everybody to be included. So if you're a conservative Christian, you know, homosexuals getting married is a problem for you. If you're a homosexual and you look at that Christian, you say, well, I want to get married and your religion doesn't let me do that, that's fucked up. That's part of what I kind of picked up from the fucked upness, right? This idea that, like, it's not just about... Religion isn't always all things to everybody, despite what we said before about how everyone can interpret the text the way they want.
Yeah.
And because it's not all things to everybody, some people may feel like aspects of religion are fucked up. And that's something that American Gods didn't really deal with so much in the book, but the show can deal with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Andy, you want to take us to the next quote?
Yeah, so Salim... Not Salim, the Salim who is now the new djinn, I suppose, says in the cab, he says, I do not pray to ask God for things, I pray to thank God. And how did this quote strike you guys?
I kind of loved it. I watch, you know, televangelist stuff every once in a while. And I see people, you know, preachers saying things like, you got to pray to God and you got to, you know, pray to God for more wealth. You got to pray to God for more success. You got to pray to God for this, for that. And in the tradition of Christianity I was brought up in, asking for things from God is kind of like, you know, you're not begging for his favor.
he gave you his favor because you're here. You are alive. He made you to love him, right? That's kind of like the Christianity I grew up in. Mm-hmm. And this idea that we ask him for God, I mean, this comes out of Mad Sweeney saying, why don't you pray for this or pray for that? And this idea is not one that is shared by everybody. And apparently it's not one shared in Salim's version of Islam. It's an idea where he's like, hey, I'm from Oman. Maybe it's a rougher place. I don't know. But the fact is, I prayed because I'm here. Because, yeah, you know, I pray to thank God for me being here, as opposed to ask God for more favors. And that's an interesting thing. I'm not saying it's wrong or it's right. It's not the tradition I was brought up in. And so I identified with what Salim said because it resonated with what I was brought up in. But that really struck me because of that.
Yeah. It's difficult for me to relate in general with that quote, as I'm not a religious person as per se, but I like the sentiment. I like what he's trying to say there, is that be thankful for, you know, where you are, and not asking for more things, demanding more things of who you worship to. The next quote that I felt was really significant, and I feel like this was sort of the fact that Vulcan is a new character invented for the episode. I feel like this is the thesis statement that they wanted to Vulcan to express in this episode. He says, the power of fire is firepower, not God, but God-like. And they believe it fills their spirits every time they pull the trigger. And then later on in the episode, he says, every bullet fired in a crowded movie theater is a prayer in my name, and that prayer makes them want to pray even harder. In other words, what I got from that is that if taking someone's life in his name via these bullets is a prayer in his name, that the fear of terrorism in that via that method makes people want to embrace even more the idea of owning guns and using them for self-defense. So it's like a self-fulfilling upward spiral of worship to Vulcan. What did you guys think?
Yeah, it's very cyclical in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like a virtuous cycle in business, right? Like, if you're looking at that as a gun manufacturer, you're saying, okay, the Second Amendment protects everyone's rights to have a weapon, right? It should not be impinged. Now, I can't be responsible for what people do with that weapon. So then there's a mass shooting, you know, whether it's, you know, in a movie theater or in a school or whatever, God forbid. And people then run out and buy more guns because what they're doing is basically saying, I need to protect myself. If you're a gun manufacturer, you know, you don't want to hear about mass shootings. But at the same time, that person paid the gun, you know, the firearms industry for getting all these weapons if they got them by paying for them instead of stealing them. And then when it all happens, you know, people like me go and buy a gun, and I am now also paying the firearms industry. That's what we call a virtuous cycle, right? Something happens that causes more people to buy your stuff because of something that happened with your stuff, so more people will buy your stuff. That's a virtuous cycle in business. And if you're Vulcan, he's an industrialist. He's very powerful. He's, you know, he's all focused on this. He's about getting bodies as much as he can, because let's face it, he's a god, and gods require sacrifice. And every time someone shoots with a bullet, that is payment to him in both money and in favor. And there's a sacrifice there. So you're right. It is a central quote to what Vulcan is. And because of this like, I'm not going to call it super cerebral, but a very intelligent layout of how we feel about weapons, which are very controversial in this country, I have a feeling that despite Vulcan being thrown into a vat, we might see him again. He might have a part yet to play, because the part he played in this episode was pivotal to the plot and moving forward. You know, now Wednesday has this crazy sword. But at the same time, I feel like there's room for him to show up again. And with all that favor, with all these people shooting in his name and using his products and all that stuff, you know, he might reincarnate, right? And there might be a new incarnation of him because of what he is and how important he is to the culture.
Well, he is a bullet, so that could come back to haunt several people in the show.
Right, exactly.
A box of bullets.
That's true. That's true. It's interesting. we'll put a pin on that for sure, because I know that bullets and guns and shootings may come in into play a little bit later in this series if it follows the book. Anything, no spoilers, but anyway, there we go. So, Dwayne, what's the last big picture quote for this week?
Yeah, so Wednesday says this, and it dovetails into what you just said about Vulcan. Wednesday says, there aren't just two Americas. Everyone looks at Lady Liberty and sees a different face. Even if it crumbles under question, people will defend the warm, safe feeling their America gives them. They will defend it with bullets. And so what I see there is effectively Wednesday saying, this is why Vulcan's powerful. Vulcan's powerful because of this virtuous cycle. And it also ties in nicely to what we were speaking about with Jesus vis-a-vis that Shakespeare quote, the devil will cite scripture for his purpose. You know, let's face it, Wednesday straight up says, everyone looks at Lady Liberty and sees a different face. That different face is effectively how you interpret what you see when you see Lady Liberty. And that's a big deal. I thought it was telling. I thought it was a very big picture discussion about what American Gods is about in a big way. I kept using the word big. I don't know why. But I just feel like Wednesday's kind of laying it out there for us to have to think about it. And I think that's where the show shines. Putting out a statement, forcing us to think, you're probably right there. That's something worth saying. And it didn't feel as if it was as on the nose as let's say, that early scene that we all have a little trouble with. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think it underscores the Vulcan's reason for being in the episode for sure. It definitely, the whole trip to Vulcan's town and his factory I think they really wanted to use it to focus on the disparity between the two Americas that we are currently living under, as you and I, as we all know, under America. And I think there's definitely some subtext in there about the far right and the far left as well. Our interpretations of gun rights as well. And our interpretation of what we consider, self-defense. And it all folds into some pretty relevant stuff. I'm not entirely certain how dialed in it is to the main thread of the book. There is a danger. I feel like there is a danger in expanding stuff for the show to stray a little off topic.
And getting too topical.
Right, right. And to get a little unfocused from the main the plot of the book. But you know what? I'm going to let the showrunners sort of do what they're doing, because maybe they have a grander design for how they want to approach this story than I'm giving them credit for.
You're like, I'll allow it. I'll allow
yeah.
it.
Sustained.
Exactly. Tosin, how do you feel about this?
How do I feel about Andy allowing it? No, I think it's very true that this episode does make quite a lot of statements there, not just two Americas. There's an America that you believe in and the America that you want and desire, but then there's also sort of the realism of what America is to some others, and I think this is part and parcel with what we've been sort of experiencing over the past several months and what we've kind of been seeing as well, too. So, I think one of the things that that we're struggling with, of course, is violence and what people think is truth and what people see as sort of gun ownership, right? So I think that might be our Audible book of the week, maybe something to do with guns, right?
Yeah, so that leads us into our Audible book of the week. Let's take a moment to talk about a sponsor, Audible.com, the world's leading provider of digital spoken word entertainment on the internet. For listeners of our podcast here, Audible's offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you a chance to check out their service. And this week I want to talk about Guns by Stephen King. Guns is a is an audio essay that Stephen King wrote that in the wake of the horrific Sandy Hook Elementary School shootings. And this it inspired Stephen King to set down his thoughts on gun violence, and it's hard-hitting writing. It's a real gut punch, and it's about less than an hour long, but I think it's really worthwhile to take a listen to it. Stephen King, obviously a fantastic writer in his own right, and a worthwhile response to the polarizing national dialogue around gun ownership and gun violence. So in order to download that book or any one of Audible's other 180,000 plus titles, go to audibletrial.com/thedrilldown. That's the affiliate link from our other podcast, The Drill Down, that we're using for this show. Again, that's audibletrial.com/thedrilldown for that free audiobook. And using that URL helps us out in the show. Even if you don't like the Audible service, you can cancel it and you still get to keep that book for free. All right.
That's great. You know, I think about guns, and, you know, the thing that is most on my mind is how important it is to be able to use them to shoot drones out of the sky when they bother your view. I live in Colorado, and we do this, and they're trying to make drones for, like, search and rescue, and they're really worried about us shooting drones out of the sky. Because it's a unique phenomenon to Colorado. It's not unheard of for you to hear about somebody trying to take someone to small claims court because they shot their drone out of the sky. Because why is it in the sky? I just don't get it.
And you can hear a lot more of Dwayne's drone shooting thoughts on our tech podcast, The Drill Down, where he will go extensively into detail about how he wants to shoot drones out of the sky.
Hello world, hear the song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy. We have a dream, we go traveling together. We spread a little love and then we'll keep moving on. Something always happens whenever we're together. We get a happy feeling when we're singing a song.
All right, let's talk about some of the significant changes from the book, from between this particular episode and the book.
Yeah, I mean, this week, looking for significant departures from the book were pretty easy. It was pretty much the entire episode. We're in brand new territory here, people. I mean, Tosin, take it away.
Yeah, exactly. We saw Laura's expanded role as she continues to sort of lead the, I think you said, Three Stooges or Three Amigos, maybe is a better, more pertinent way, down the road. It's good to see because these interactions are sort of are fresh. And we also actually see a bit more of, you know, Wednesday trying to get Shadow to forget Laura and having more of a sort of conversation around that. And Shadow having the capability of actually even seeing where Laura is. So it's not just a one-way phone call, you know, call home, Laura, call home. It's more of a two-way channel. So that's pretty interesting to see. What about yourself?
Thanks. I was going to say that's a pretty good observation. I felt like Wednesday felt a little bit afraid of Laura in a way. Like, she threatens his dominance over Shadow. And then there's also this idea that, like Jean Grey and you know, Scott Summers, Cyclops, there's kind of this like rapport between the two of them that can't be just broken by distance. So that's also pretty cool. What else is different? Vulcan and Jesus are pretty much new. Now, if you've read the book or you're a fan of what's going on with American Gods, Neil Gaiman had originally intended to put Jesus in the book, but he couldn't figure out a way to do it right. I mean, all of us have talked about this scene in the beginning of this episode. We're not sure that this was put together right either, but it's an attempt to put together a Jesus that that kind of reflects some of the stuff that Neil Gaiman was talking about. The most recent version of American Gods, the book, has like a kind of scene with Jesus in it at the very end, outside of the context of the actual story. It's not at all what we saw with this Mexican situation, the border crossing, but at the same time, it's interesting to see how he continues, or Brian Fuller or Michael Green, these people are continuing to try to bring one of the central cultural pieces of America, Jesus, into the story. And, you know, they're going to, you know, kind of maybe stumble, and maybe they'll do well. We don't know, but that was pretty interesting. Andy, last bit of sort of significant change.
Yeah, the Three Stooges, Salim and Sweeney and Laura, Mad Sweeney and Laura, in doing a road trip bit in this episode, which is something that is completely not in the book at all. I mean, Laura's role in the book is super minimal compared to the expanded role that she's had now, and as well as Mad Sweeney and Salim. The only place you see Salim in the book is in that one Coming to America sequence. Other than that, you don't see him at all in the book. So it's fascinating to me that they've taken these characters and expanded on them. I'll be honest with you, I really like Salim's presence, and I like his character. I love what Pablo Schreiber is doing with Mad Sweeney, so it's always fun to see him and Laura once again. So while this was a completely unexpected road trip team pairing, I think it works really well, and it's a nice addition to the series.
Yeah, they, in the book, they're all individual loners, mm-hmm. other than Salim, who's not there for very long. And bringing them together is, Three's Company, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, or a crowd in the case of that car. But what I do like about it, I mean, I thought it was a little weird how Salim happened to be in the same hotel in Indiana. Okay, whatever. But I do think that the guy playing Salim is a fantastic actor. He's really bringing some spark to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the woman playing Laura is similarly powerful. And, you know, her body's beginning to fall apart. She's noticing it. The flies are showing up more. And she's not giving up. And she's got this determination. And maybe it's the fire lit under her ass by the passage of time, the fact that her body's not going to hold out. But there's that. And then even Mad Sweeney grows. He's like, look, I'm done trying to steal this coin from you. You're clearly too strong. Let's get you some resurrection. Right, let's see if we can figure out how to get you to become alive again properly so I can get my coin back. Because he's racing against time, too. This bad luck is not helping him out. So all that stuff, I think, is pretty cool. And I'm digging these new changes.
Yeah, me too. I think hopefully this trio sticks around for a bit longer. I can say in the book, if you're familiar with the book, it doesn't end so well for, I don't think it ends so well for any of these characters, really.
Yeah, not so much. So there's that. But speaking of characters that where it's not going so well, how did you feel, Andy, about Corbin Burnson playing Vulcan?
Well, I didn't even recognize it as Corbin Burnson from who many people might remember from L.A. Law back in the day. So this is Corbin Burnson, and I feel like he's sort of channeling Bryan Cranston, you know, like a Walter White era Bryan Cranston, a bit of a poor man's Bryan Cranston. It definitely feels like he's sort of channeling that sort of style of acting, and that I think physically they look similar in this characterization as Vulcan. But otherwise, I think he did a great job. I think for each of these particular major gods that they're introducing, and this one's a new one to this series, it's not in the book, that you have to have a hard-hitting guest stunt as they say.
Powerful actor, kind of like one of those special guest stars. It's like, you know, you couldn't have a great Star Trek The Next Generation unless you had a Shakespearean, award-winning Shakespearean actor like Patrick Stewart to play the role of this thing that's so out of whack from our normal situation. And I feel like if you're going to play Odin, if you're going to play Vulcan, and you're not going to be dressed in, you know, in Odin's case, a long coat with an eye patch, or in Vulcan's case, a toga. You need people who can carry these characters powerfully and do so in a way that people can relate to, that seem real, and frankly, in the case of these two gods, paternalistic in a big way. Mm-hmm. And I think these guys are doing it. So just like Patrick Stewart made a spacefaring, you know, captain, like, seem real when it, the whole situation of Star Trek is so ridiculous. But yeah, I thought this was good. I didn't really recognize Corbin Burnson at first, and I was like, my mom used to love him on L.A. Law. And man, Vulcan is grumpy, and which is great because Vulcan is grumpy in the mythology. In the mythology, Vulcan's been married to Aphrodite, who's constantly cheating on him because he's ugly. And it's a whole thing. Well, I guess Venus is married to Vulcan, and she's constantly cheating on him. Zeus has arranged the marriage. She's not happy. She's constantly going abroad, and Vulcan's always annoyed at it. He's always like, he's so annoyed that he makes volcanoes explode. That's the kind of thing. So that was really interesting to me. What do you guys hope to see in the next episode?
Well, it's interesting. I don't know. We're in completely uncharted territory. I know in general where this story is headed, but I can't tell you like where they're going next, as they seem to be taking a really circuitous route away from the main thread. But I do like seeing our Three Stooges in the car, so I want to hang with them a little bit more. I want to see a little bit more of those guys in this sort of newly invented goal for the series about getting Laura to be resurrected proper again.
You know, now Shadow and Wednesday have a sword, so there can only be one, right?
Oh god. Maybe they'll all find their way to Lakeside. Not. I don't know. I feel like Lakeside is mysteriously missing from this retelling, and I also feel like Andy's always hated Lakeside, so maybe some of these people showrunning also wanted to find ways to avoid that. But I don't know what's happening with this sword. This sword is like a new thing. It's not even just like a sword. It's like Excalibur's daddy, right? Like Excalibur would be this sword's bitch, right? Like this sword is, it's huge, it's long, it's got Yggdrasil on it, it's got runes. You know how hardcore runes are? We don't even know today how to translate many runes you find on ancient Norwegian and Swedish stones and rocks and stuff. They're just that hardcore, right? So I don't know what's gonna happen, but you know, there are two episodes left in the season, and this is episode 6 and it's episode 8. I'm really nervous. Are they going to make it, right? Are they going to make it to a point where I feel as if they've gotten to a pretty good spot where I can be, like, we can be left off? Obviously, this is going to be some sort of cliffhangery thing, but can I survive in terms of, like, anxiety for the next season? You know what I mean? I think there's a lot going on here, and I'm kind of excited about it, but I'm also worried that old Seinfeld adage, you know, they're not going to make it to be continued. Oh, damn.
Yeah, assuming there's a next season.
Ooh.
I don't think they've officially said there's been a next season yet, so.
That's true. Usually the re-up has come already. We'll see what's happening here. Okay, let's move on to Ephemera. Andy, you already mentioned Guns by Stephen King, but we've got one more thing here. Why don't you read that one off?
Yeah, so Ephemera is our section where we add a little bit of extra external links that help you appreciate what's going on inside this episode. And I mentioned Guns by Stephen King. And I guess in honor of Salim Madzouini and Laura as our proverbial Three Stooges, we'd like to recommend The Three Stooges, The Ultimate Collection, which is available on Amazon. So you can see a little bit of the actual Three Stooges. I think that'll be fun. Anything else that you guys want to add before we sign off?
So just a quick correction.
I was just going to say, this just in, Stars blesses American Gods with a season 2. Thank goodness, because there are only 8 episodes and I need that second season. I need that.
There we go. Has to work. Season 2 is going to be the Lakeside season, I can tell.
Oh my God, Lakeside! it's gonna be all Henselman.
It's
all
gonna
the time.
Be it's gonna be painful. It's gonna be we're gonna get 2 complete episodes just about how to winterize your cabin.
I guarantee you. For those people who haven't read the book, be pleased that Lakeside has not shown up yet, because this is funny, weird, like time warp inside the story. And the idea that we're going to like put a car on ice and drop it, is I don't need that to happen. So I don't need a murder mystery in the middle of what we're doing here. We already have enough to work
on. No spoilers. No spoilers.
No spoilers. I promise.
All right.
I'm trying to... I'm helping you help me.
So let's wrap this up by I'm going to ask you guys. I'm going to start with you, Dwayne. Where can we find your work on the internet when you're not here talking about Stars, American Gods?
Check me out on Twitter, twitter.com/DwayneD, DWAYNED. I write about my thoughts about technology on DwayneD.com, and sometimes there's some images there. And, you know, you can check us out again on God's Podcast on Twitter. That's where I do some of the tweeting for this show. But other than that, Andy will tell you where else you can find all of us, you know, in addition to being on Geeks of Doom. Tosin, what about you?
Find me at twitter.com/toast4321. Other ramblings at toastr2d2.tumblr.com. And you can also find me on Geeks of Doom. What about yourself, Andy?
Yeah, you can find me at MrBabyMan.com, or just do a Google search for Andrew Sorsini or Mr. Babyman, which is my social media handle, and you'll find everything that I'm liking online throughout the week there. You can also catch us, if you like what we're doing here on American Gods, you'll love what we did for HBO's Westworld, which is on Violent Delights, and you can and also if you love our dynamic in general, we do a weekly tech podcast called The Drill Down. All of those can be found here at Geeks of Doom and the Geeks of Doom Podcast Network. And also just go to iTunes and look for those shows there, and you'll find everything that we're doing there. That is going to do it for this week's episode of The Dominant Paradigm. Join us next week where we talk about the next episode of Starz American Gods titled Prayer for Mad Sweeney. That should be interesting. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you guys next week.